Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you from the Quicken Loan Studios. This is the Jim Rome Show, Mortgage Confidently with Quicken Loans. Open segment because we are going to have John Smoltz. He is going to be coming on in the second segment here of hour number two. Still to come on the show in hour number three, we'll talk with the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, and Eddie Olczyk, who is at Belmont as part of the coverage on NBC Sports, 800-636-8686. You could email the show, rome@haveittake.com. Well, in watching Jim over the years and listening to Jim over the years, it was so awesome when he came out and talked about how he was nominated for the Radio Hall of Fame. Now, I don't know a lot about the Radio Hall of Fame, probably because I'll never be in the Radio Hall of Fame, so I really haven't paid that much attention to it until Jim started talking about it. And I've got a couple of thoughts on this, and I haven't been asked to do this. I'm doing this because I want to. I just talked a little bit last segment about my background in radio. And the power of radio is still just that. It's powerful. It's an unbelievable medium. I can tell you that I would not be in this business today had I not grown up listening to Marv Albert do the Knicks and the Rangers on radio. There's no way I would have been a play-by-play announcer. And I'm just finishing my 30th year of doing NBA basketball. I don't know what I would be doing, but it would not have been a sportscaster because he hooked me. And I got so fascinated when I went to Bowling Green to play lacrosse. And I'll never forget this. My senior year, I was recruited to go to Bowling Green. And they took me to a Bowling Green Ohio State hockey game. And I didn't even know Bowling Green had a hockey team. And yet they were a national powerhouse. As a matter of fact, two of the players on that team, Kenny Morrow and Mark Wells, ended up playing on the Miracle on Ice in 1980. And I announced a lot of those games, particularly in my junior and senior year. And then I worked 1 year in Bowling Green on radio. And radio was just so unbelievable, even starting back then. I was a morning disc jockey. I was an account executive. I was the sports director. I announced Bowling Green hockey and some basketball. And getting up at 4:30 in the morning and making it down to the station. And so radio has always been a part of who I am. And I'm so happy to be able to talk about Jim in the Radio Hall of Fame, because I put out on Twitter earlier this week, if Jim Rome is not in the Radio Hall of Fame, then there shouldn't be a Radio Hall of Fame. I'll never forget back in the early 2000s. And I didn't listen to Jim a lot. I didn't really know who Jim was. And all of a sudden, I started hearing about these tour stops. And I'll tell you something. I will never forget when Jim Rome came to Sacramento for his tour stop. And I was like, I need to go check this out. And I'm telling you, the scene that Saturday at Arco Arena was unbelievable. Sold out. Place was going nuts. When Jim Rome walked in with Janet, you would have thought that the Rolling Stones had just pulled up to the arena. I am not exaggerating. The fans, the craziness, it was absolutely unbelievable. And I listened to Jim this past week talk about being on WFAN in New York with Boomer on the morning show, Boomer Esiason. And Boomer, of course, a big fan of the Jungle and a frequent guest with Jim. And when you think about radio and Radio Hall of Fame, like, WFAN set the standard for everything else that's going on in the country right now. And he talked a little bit about that, about when you think about sports talk radio, you really think of WFAN. Now, there are obviously a lot of great sports talk shows in the country, but it really started at WFAN. And I'll tell you what I admire the most about Jim. I always get asked this. I always, when I go speak at schools or I go to a college, I always get asked for recommendations about getting started in the business. And I go, listen to as many people as you can and develop your own style. I grew up listening to Marv Albert, but I had to develop my own style. Ernie Harwell had to develop his own style. Jack Buck, Joe Buck, and I can go on and on. Tell you one thing about WFAN in New York. And I grew up with Christopher Mad Dog Russo. We were best friends growing up as kids. And he and Mike Francesa really got the ball rolling in sports talk radio at WFAN in New York. And Chris is unbelievably unique. And Mike, but you know what? There's nobody more unique in sports talk radio on the planet than Jim Rome. You won't find Jim Rome anywhere else. There's one Jim Rome, and he comes in here Monday through Friday, and he does his show. You want to talk about unique, and you want to talk about a guy that everybody knows in the sports industry? There is no doubt in my mind. If I went to an NFL stadium or a major league park or an NHL or an NBA arena, and I just took a poll, and I just stood on the concourse and said, you know who Jim Rome is? Like, are you kidding me? Everyone knows who Jim Rome is. And you talk about the clones. And yeah, I listen, I'm 58 years old. I don't get all of the verbiage. And I've listened to Jim for, gosh, two decades now. How many people in the world of entertainment on the radio have their own vocabulary, their own language? You think you're going to find that anywhere else? I mean, Jim Rome and the clones, you know, Jim is in the basement this week. Tune in to anyone else in the country who's on vacation and they use a term like, yeah, I'm going to be in the basement all week. Right? And we can go on and on. And so, you know, you want to talk about radio as a medium. You want to talk about Hall of Fame. Yeah, you better text 800 to 96000 or radiovote.com. And I know if you're tuning in every day, you're already a big Jim Rome fan. But I heard him last week and he's right. Go tell your buddies. Go to a party and tell everybody to take their cell phone out because this is dependent on your vote. But if Jim Rome is not a radio Hall of Famer, then get rid of the Hall of Fame. Get rid of it. Again, unique, a guy that has been doing this as long as he has. Let me ask you this question. How many sports radio personalities can go on their show and go, hey, you know what? Next month, I'm going to be going to Cleveland. I'm going to do a tour stop, and I'm going to be at the Q. Or, you know what? Hey, folks, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be in Sacramento for a tour stop. Or you can go to Tampa. Or you can go anywhere else. And the station in that market that carries this show with the tickets can be sold out like that. Now, how many people in the country that do sports for a living right here on this medium on radio can pull that off? Name them. I've got two because they did it at Radio City Music Hall, and that was Mike and the Mad Dog. And no disrespect to anybody else in the country. I just don't know if there's another individual in this business that could say, you know what, I'm going to be in this venue on this date, and you can't even, it's sold out, and the place is going crazy. So when I think of Hall of Fame, yeah, Jim Rome's a Hall of Famer. So get out there and vote, 800 to 96000 or radiovote.com. And trust me, for those of you in my generation, for those of you that are younger, the power of radio. Clones, think about how the Jim Rome show has affected your life. Think about what your day is like without Romy, right? I mean, is your life complete? I mean, you're probably begging on the fact that Jim's on vacation. Oh, excuse me, he's not on vacation. He's in the basement. That's right. See, I'm getting the verbiage down. He's in the basement. He's not on vacation. He's in the basement. That's what makes Jim Rome unique. So again, vote 800 to 96000 or vote radiovote.com. So that's my little campaign for Romy. And again, I just love what he's done for our profession because, you know what? I've been doing this a long time. You can't compare someone like myself to anyone like Jim Rome, obviously. And I've been pretty successful. But then I look at where the bar is. Jim Rome put the bar up here. You want to talk about the bar being high. So if you want to talk about that, give me a shout. 800-636-8686. We're also going to talk some baseball with John Smoltz when we come back. Do you know that John Smoltz is playing in the U.S. Senior Open later this month? Now, how unbelievable is that? And I've watched John play a lot because each and every year he plays at the Celebrity Golf Tournament up in Lake Tahoe. He is an amazing golfer, but I didn't think I would ever see Smoltzy playing in the U.S. Senior Open, and he's going to be doing that a little bit later this month. So we're going to talk about him again in hour number three. We're going to talk Browns football with Hugh Jackson. Now, if you listen, I went to college in Ohio. I get it. I lived through the Brian Sipe interception to the Raiders. I lived through the drive. I lived through the Ernest Byner fumble. All of my friends, you know how many years I've made fun of my college friends? Year after year, decade after decade. And here the Browns are. They've what, one game in 2 years? Hugh Jackson's going to tell me why this year is going to be different at the start of hour number three. And if it's not different, no disrespect to Hugh, because I've always admired Hugh. I had a weekly show with Hugh when he was the head coach of the Raiders. Hugh's got to get it done this year. And if you're a Browns fan, you should take solace in that, because they're better at every single position on the football field. This should be. Again, I know you've heard that before. But hey, the Red Sox won a World Series. The Cubs won a World Series. The Philadelphia Eagles just won a Super Bowl. Look at the 49ers, how bad they were last year. And then at the end of the season, no one could touch them. Are the Browns going to open up some eyes this year? We'll talk with Hugh. That's coming up in hour number three. But when we return, we're going to talk some baseball with Smoltzy, John Smoltz, MLB Network, and Fox. That is coming up next right here on the Jim Rome Show. Hey, working up a sweat when you're on the field is one thing. Breaking into a sweat in your car is another. If you turn on the AC in your car and hot air comes out, it's time to take some serious steps. So get your vehicle to the coolest place in town, O'Reilly Auto Parts. It's Murray AC Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. And while your AC may eventually need professional repairs, O'Reilly Auto Parts has what you need to make it through the hottest months of summer. Summer can be bad enough. There's no reason to drive around and then look like you just stepped out of the sauna. Hey, it's going to be hot for a good while. If it's cold, there's a good chance Murray makes it. And O'Reilly Auto Parts has it in stock. Everything from refrigerants to Murray AC compressors. So not only do you get what you need to make your ride cool and comfortable, you get it with great service, great parts, and guaranteed low prices. Hey, don't let your summer spoil your cool. It's Murray AC Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Potential game changers all over the board. CBS Sports Network's team of college basketball experts will break down everything you need to know about this year's NBA draft class. Don't miss the Inside College Basketball Draft Special starting tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. Always good when we can talk some baseball, and we're going to talk a little golf with John Smoltz. Of course, you see him on MLB Network and Fox. And John, thanks for coming on the Jim Rome Show. It's good to talk to you again. How are you?
Man, I am just waking up every morning hoping what I just took, what just took place isn't a prank. Someone's going to punk me,
yeah,
and say that that qualifier was just a hoax.
You know, you've done so much on the baseball diamond. You've won a World Series, Cy Young Award, Hall of Fame. But take me back to May 31st and what that moment was like when you found out you would qualify to play in the U.S. Senior Open later this month.
Yeah, so since turning 50, you know, I've had this on my calendar, try to find a way that I could do baseball in my schedule and create enough time to play in a qualifier. So I tried it last year, you know, came fairly close, played pretty well. And then this year, you know, leading up to it, I had a really, I was 10 days on the road, had 3 games in 4 days. And, you know, I got actually a chance to play 3 days prior of golf going into it, so I felt pretty good. And it was just the longest day of my life. You know, I had 8 hours after I posted a score to find out if I was going to make it or not, and then only find out that, you know, 3-hole playoff for one spot. It was things that, you know, my past had prepared me for, but no way could I have known what the anxiousness or the feeling I would have standing over a shot, trying to hit a shot in the post in the playoff after really not swinging a club for 8 hours.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, congratulations. We look forward to seeing that later this month. Well, it looks like Shohei Ohtani is going to have Tommy John surgery. Not official, but it looks like it's heading that way. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm here to say that this has become such commonplace that no one bats an eye anymore. You know, I've been in disagreement with pitching philosophy for the last 10 years in baseball. We have this analytical approach, which I'm not against analytics. Don't take it that way. But I think that we're not addressing the injury rate because we just believe, I think, my opinion, baseball believes there's just so many options and so many arms that would just, oh, well, get it done. He'll be back. He'll be good. And we've seen this way too often, especially the transformation of now some great Japanese pitchers that are coming over. And it just seems like the style and they're getting used to our custom and our way of pitching is very difficult for them. And I just think we're going to have to – we got to make some changes, in my opinion. But it's another Tommy John, and it's too bad because this was one of the greatest stories in baseball for a long time.
A couple of weeks ago, I was watching you do a game with Bob Costas on the MLB Network. You were at Yankee Stadium doing the Yanks and the Astros, and you two had a really interesting conversation as it relates to extra innings. For those that are listening that did not watch that game, give me your thoughts on what you would like to see as far as extra innings goes.
Yeah, I'm big into making some changes to help the game of baseball. It's the slowest sport to make changes. We've had the rich in history go all the way back. The game has changed. It's evolved. And we have to adapt with it. And I think the commissioner's on board with some of these things to try and look at a way to make games more exciting and not drag on. Look, hockey went in a drastic way when they made changes to their no ties anymore and 3-on-3, 4-on-4, opening it up and making the shootouts available. Baseball is not meant to play regular season 14, 15, 18 innings. It's not good for anybody. It's not good for the teams. Now, in the regular season, you can adopt an international style where you create excitement, strategy, and you make it to where runs are going to be scored. And you put runners on first and second, nobody out, and let each team try to figure out how they're going to manage that inning. The likelihood of those innings continuing to be tied after that are not as great. Some people have even said, go a step further and let's just make it bases loaded, nobody out. Now, this wouldn't affect the stats of the players or the pitchers.
Right.
And contrary to most people's beliefs, nobody wins at the end of the day when you go 18 innings. More than likely, the stadiums end up empty. The players are fatigued. There's greater risk for injury. Now, postseason comes along, and now all bets are off. You play till you get a win. You don't adopt these different changes.
John Smoltz joining us, Fox Sports, MLB Network. Is the game in trouble with the younger generation, in your opinion?
Oh, I think so. If you'd asked me as a player if you'd asked me this question when I was a player, I'm not really concerned about the long-term value of the game. I'm trying to be the best player I can be. And I'm sure if you asked regular players today, they would say the same thing. No, it's great. It's vibrant. There's great players. There is all of that, but the game in itself, from an action standpoint, is reaching halts and slowing down to a point where attention spans are not capable of waiting this thing out. So there's going to have to be adjustments made to try to alter the way the game's being played. It's three true outcomes. You hear this like it's a broken record. A strikeout, a walk, and a homer. That's basically taking over our game. And the philosophies that are rewarding these players, I don't blame the players for surviving this game and competing in the reward system that exists, but on a long-term value of this game being the most popular or one of the most popular sports, we're going to really lag if we don't pay attention to what people are saying. And what they're doing at the games are no different than what people are doing in life. They're on their phones more than they're watching the game because the game has too many interruptions, too many mid-inning pitching changes, too many pitchers per game. You only have to look at a box score. Don't look at the score. Go all the way down and look at how many pitchers pitch a game, and you can pretty much accurately determine how long that game is, either a long game or a short game. Rarely will you ever see 12 pitchers between the two teams end in 3 hours and 30 minutes or less. And that's really what I think the commissioner is facing, is in a day and age where technology's great, players are great, but the game is not being played at a fast level. Players are playing it slower than they ever have before. And there's no detriment to doing that if you're a player, other than rule changes coming down the pipe. And I think that's going to happen.
John, on Saturday doing the Yanks-Mets game, you had a very interesting conversation about the position of the umpire early in that game as far as what you felt the pitcher would get, a call and may not, based on where the position of the umpire was. And I didn't even think about that in the past. But there's been so much dialogue about should umpires be replaced with the machine. I don't want to see that, John. I don't think a lot of baseball fans do. As somebody that's accomplished what you have in baseball, you talk to players, you talk to managers. Where are we heading with home plate umpires in the future, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a great conversation, and I'm with you. I don't want to see that ultimately come to play. What has hurt umpires, and it's unfair for umpires, is the technology so great that we see things that no way could you have seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And so it exposes them in a human way when you're trying to make calls spur of the moment. It's a lot easier to see something afterwards and go, well, that wasn't a strike, or that guy was safe at first. What I've always said that hurt the game of umpires, in my opinion, when we were playing, everybody had their own distinctive strike zone. It was made for their eyes and their positioning, and you were fine with it. Now, fast forward, everything is more into a constructed strike zone that everybody is supposed to call the same way. That is hard to do. It used to be a Quez-Tec system. It used to be graded and how they were doing based on the analytics and the technology that exists today. I just think we got to let umpires be umpires behind the plate and let them be their own umpire and not penalize or put them in a position where they're hunting for pitches that are balls. And what I mean by that is the perception of calling a strike a ball is greater against them than the perception of calling a ball a strike. In other words, if it's close, you're going to want to err on the side of a ball. Then are you going to want to hunt for strikes? And I think that in a game that has been defined by strikeouts and walks and homers is becoming painfully obvious that, you know, there's a push for this kind of robotic umpire. And I'm not there yet, and certainly I hope we don't get there. But with the way that you see the game, the positioning of the umpires, remember in the old days, the big chest protector
sits
straight over the catcher? And then you had this basic on-plane view of where the pitch is coming in. Now with the technology and equipment that they wear, and they're being taught to pick one side, and they've exposed themselves in that one side, by the way, to foul tips, missed pitches, catcher missing. So I've heard how it's explained to me. I just know watching the games now, there is definitely a definitive side that you could get an inch or two as a pitcher based on the way it's set up.
You know, John, those are great points. The problem that I hear from the folks that want robotic strike zones, they want perfection. And I'm like, you know, you don't get perfection from the players. You don't get perfection from anything in sports. There is no such thing as perfection. I just think the beauty of the game is the home plate umpire over the years. I just can't, you know, I think baseball's in a little bit of trouble right now. You talked about the younger generation. If you make balls and strikes robotic, I think you're going to lose another portion of your baseball audience, John.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, I don't think we're getting anywhere close to that point because of instant replay. And instant replay, by the way, in my opinion, went way too far. It was really there to correct the obvious, not the details. Now we're having a guy's foot comes off the bag by a quarter of an inch and he holds the tag. That's not what instant replay was there for. And because instant replay has taken away the genuine arguments, the manager coming out and defending his player, the umpires are left with nothing other than straight ejection based on the rules that you can't argue an instant replay or you can't, you know, when it's turned. There's so many things that we've taken away from the umpire and the human nature that I feel bad for him because now all we see is what doesn't go right instead of what does go right. And, you know, that component, again, technology has taken us to a point where, you know, football kind of started it with the throwing of the flag and the challenge and having only so many. And baseball's trying to get away from it slowing everything down and getting the obvious calls right are really the priority of this whole thing, not getting every single call right, to your point.
John, I want to get back to golf real quick. Every time I've talked to you at Lake Tahoe, with the exception of the 1 year you were being bothered by a shoulder injury, your goal was always to win. As you look at later this month, what are your goals as you approach the first U.S. Senior Open for yourself?
You know, I've learned a lot of things through my previous golf experiences. I really want to be able to play, I call it freedom golf. I've yet to do that in any tournament because the expectations I have are so great that I actually put more pressure on myself and don't enjoy what I'm doing. So playing more tournament golf allows me to get in the element to where I can maximize. I'm not afraid of pressure, and I'm not certainly shy away from the opportunity of doing something like this. But until you go through it, until you're physically able. I don't have a great schedule, and that's not poor me. It's just the fact that I got a baseball job and I got to travel a lot, and I don't really practice a lot. And now I'm given an opportunity to kind of, in my mind, implement a plan I've always wanted to do and see at the highest level what I can do in this game. I have tremendous respect for those guys who've done it their whole life. I'm not trying to be anything I'm not by showing up thinking, oh, you know, I can do this. No, I'm really trying to fulfill a dream of mine and to see at what level the competitive juices and the life lessons I've learned can help me towards this environment.
It's so
it's going
awesome.
To be the time of my life.
So awesome. Final thought on that. I used to talk to Rick Roden, who used to win at Tahoe every year, about, you know, playing and the aspirations that, you know, you and others have. And what you just said resonates with me, because I think that the vast majority of people that watch golf and golfers that are listening right now that are scratch golfers and think, oh, gee, I could do that, they have no idea how difficult it is to either qualify for any type of PGA event or, in this case, you know, senior U.S. Open. They have no clue how difficult this is. And I think what you did, and I'm not just saying this because you're on with us here on the Jim Rome Show, it's mind-boggling, John. It's mind-boggling that you were able to do this.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And honestly, what I'm doing in these next 2 weeks is trying to slow everything down. I'm telling you, if anyone is like me, when you drive a car, I'm not trying to break speed limits, but if there's an open lane, I'm taking it. If we get to a red light and there's four cars piled up in the left lane and no one's in the right lane, I'm like, that's foolish. Let me get first. Let me get in the right lane. What I'm trying to do is slow everything down and go at a snail's pace for me, because that is not something I'm really good at. And in the next 2 weeks, whether it's brush my teeth slow, whether it's literally take my time from point A to point B, slow my golf game down, those are things I'm having to learn muscle memory on the fly. And time will only tell if when I get in the event, do I speed up or am I comfortable slowing down? Because those guys have learned how to do this their whole life.
John, all the best. Thanks for coming on the show. Greatly appreciated.
My pleasure for having me.
All right, that's John Smoltz. Good stuff right there. Next segment is open because we've got Hugh Jackson and Eddie O in hour number three. So give us a call at 800-636-8686. But right now we have our latest sports update. Here's Jay Berman.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
Open segment, clones. So if you want to get in, now is the best time at 800-636-8686. Don't forget, coming up at the start of hour number three, we'll talk with Hugh Jackson. We'll talk some Browns football. And we'll wrap up the show with the great Eddie Olczyk. And we'll check in on a little bit of controversy from what we saw Saturday at the Belmont Stakes. Again, 800-636-8686. We get to Christian in Maine. Christian, thanks for calling the Jim Rome Show. What's up?
Hey, what's up, Nate? Doing a good job. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Thanks for calling,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's no problem. Hey, man, I'm going to go back. I'm sorry, I'm going to backtrack a little bit to the program. The story that the Warriors spent $400,000, allegedly, on champagne to spray over themselves for about 2 minutes is kind of sickening. And I think that it's time for us as clones to all join hands and start a GoFundMe page to create a space for us to raise money for the homeless people that $400,000 could have fed and helped. Come on, clones, we can do it. If each one of us just we donate one page, you do it. You guys at the Jim Rome Show create that page, and if each clone donated $1, we could help so many homeless people. I live in a state, Maine, where we have less than 1 million people. That $400,000 could have fed probably, I don't know, a third of the homeless population in the state for the year and next year. We can do this, clones. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I'm telling you, sports is a great extravagance. Humanity is better. Let's do it, man. Let's do it.
All right. Thanks very much. Here's the bottom line. You got to spend some money for the champagne. But, you know, again, as reported by Darren Revelle, the business reporter for ESPN, put out on Twitter, I couldn't believe it. I did a double take when I looked at my phone. I was like, you know, was that $40,000 or $400,000? And he was like, $400,000 on champagne that you're spraying around the locker room? And then did you see some of the Warriors coming down the steps of the plane when they landed in Oakland on Saturday? Again, with the golden bottles of champagne, spraying it as they're walking down the steps of the airplane? Hey, I'm all for celebrating. I don't know if I would go Alex Ovechkin style of celebrating. I mean, have you seen the video coming out of D.C. on OV? And congratulations to the Caps, by the way. Just an incredible. The Stanley Cup Finals was great. I know it only went five games, but, I mean, just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. All right, let's move along and get to Bill in San Diego. Bill, you're in the jungle on the Jim Rome Show. Go ahead.
Hey, but how you doing? That was a great interview with John Smoltz.
Thank you.
I umpired college and high school baseball for many years in San Diego, and what he said was just spot on. I get so angry with this whole robot thing, and why don't they just put 18 robots out there to play the game? I mean, if they need that much perfection, what the heck? But, you know, and Manfred is always trying to speed the game up. I don't know how many times he watches these instant replays, but I've seen him go 5 to 8 minutes before.
It's ridiculous.
It is totally ridiculous. And, you know, the call's even out in the air. I mean, they're never bad calls, but now the guy's foot slips off the base a little bit. The instant, it's just ridiculous how what's happened. Now, to the arm injury thing, I have a theory about it, and I actually talked to Dave Stewart one day down at Ratchaburrara High School about it, and the pitching has gotten to a point where they do what's called standing tall. And what it does is they land almost like on a stiff leg and they slingshot the ball. And I absolutely believe that that's a big cause of all these Tommy John surgeries. And, you know, the old days, you watch old films of Tom Seaver, he wasn't happy with his mechanics unless his right knee was dirty at the end of the game.
Now, you're right. That knee was always dirty. And thanks for the call, Bill. I'm going to move on. But you're right. That knee was always dirty. Here's the bottom line. Pitchers back when Tom Seaver was coming up, they didn't have a pitch count. It didn't matter if they were going 130, 140 pitches. And here's the other deal. They were programmed that they were going to finish the game. They weren't coming out after the fifth inning or the sixth inning. You think when Tom Seaver took the hill, he was thinking, you know, I'm only going to go six innings today? Come on. Tom Seaver, when he got the ball, every single time was going to go until the game ended. Unless he got shellacked. That was the mentality of the pitchers back then. That's the way they were trained. I mean, it's ridiculous right now. We get to Andrew in San Diego on the Jim Rome Show. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, man?
Hey, just a couple of questions. I'm just so, I don't understand with the NBA. You're watching basketball, and I'm old school basketball. But you're watching these guys, the way they dribble the ball, bringing the from the hand to the bottom of the ball, bringing it over, carrying it, which back then used to be called carrying. So, or palming the ball.
Yep.
When did the rule change on that? And secondly, I saw a lot of pushing off when the guy has the ball and the defender's in front of him. He pushed off with the left hand and nothing is called. Did the rules change? Or?
Well, no, you know what? The pushing off, it's almost like no harm, no foul. But here's the bottom line on the carrying. I totally agree with you. It has gotten completely out of hand. And thank you very much for the call. It's gotten completely out of hand. You could call carrying on every single possession in the NBA. It's now gotten to a point where I think they need to kind of harness back a little bit. All right, let's move along to Mike in Clearwater, Florida. Mike, thanks for calling the Jim Rome Show. Go ahead.
Hey, Grant, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Mike.
I got a call. You know, I call usually every time you come in. I'm like the one of four or five Orlando Magic fans in the universe.
I'm calling. Sorry.
Just
kidding. I do the Kings games. Don't worry about it, buddy.
You know, the last team to make it to the Eastern Conference, out of the Eastern Conference, that wasn't a LeBron James team, don't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Hey, you know, when you have Shaq and Penny, you should go pretty far. But anyway, go ahead. What can I do for you?
That was in 2009, though.
Oh, yeah, with Hito Turkoglu and Dwight Howard and then Ryan Anderson and that whole team. Yeah, go ahead.
Seems like a century ago.
Yeah, it does, absolutely.
But it's just weird. It's like I am a huge fan. I mean, I'm a diehard fan. You know, these last few years and the future looks so dismal. And then they go out and they hire another retread coach in Steve Clifford. Man, I barely know anything about the guy. I know he's worked for us before under this guy or that guy. But some of these lower-tier NBA teams right now, it's so bleak the way the NBA is set up, and these teams, everybody wants to create a super team. I mean, it almost should be two separate leagues. I'll take your take, Grant.
All right, thanks, Mike. Well, as far as Steve Clifford goes, I've heard great things about Steve Clifford from other coaches around the league and the players that played for him. So Steve Clifford is not the problem. And by that, I mean, this is a players league. You know, fans need to understand, and I have the utmost respect for Steve Kerr. I think I love Steve Kerr. But, I mean, there are a lot of people that could do the same thing that Steve Kerr does with the Golden State Warriors. And Steve would probably be the first one to admit that. Now, his way of dealing with the players, yeah, I think it goes a long way in this day and age. But back to what you said about super teams. I said this at the beginning of the show. The money is there for the NBA, the record ratings, the record attendance every year. But is it good for a sport when you only have two or three teams that realistically can win a championship before this season starts? Is it good for the league when you're in the Western Conference and barring injury, you know for a fact that it is going to be Golden State and Houston playing in the Western Conference Finals? Is it good for the league when you know that any team that LeBron James is on in the East is going to be in the finals and they're going to beat whomever they have to get there? Now, that's a little bit of a different story only because LeBron's done it with three teams, Cleveland, then Miami, back to Cleveland. And I think Boston's going to be really good for a long time to come, folks. Their team is set. Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens, and what they've done there, they are going to be really good. But back to super teams. All right, if LeBron James leaves the Cavaliers, let's just say he ends up going to Houston. I don't think he will. Is that good for the NBA? I mean, what does that do? All right, once again, if you're in the West and you're not Golden State or Houston, you're just playing the year out and you're going to try to make the playoffs and you're going to do the best you can, but you know that barring injuries, you're not beating Houston and you're not beating Golden State. So is it good for the league? Business-wise, rating-wise, attendance, it seems to be good, but no, I don't think it's good for the league. Jimmy in New Jersey. Jimmy, you're on the Jim Rome Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing? It's Jimmy from Jersey.
Yeah, what's up, Jimmy?
Nothing. I was thinking, instead of the $400,000 in champagne that they spent, maybe they could put it towards the parade that the taxpayers are going to pick up probably most of the tab.
Yeah, I don't know who pays for the parades anymore. I know, and thanks for the call, Jimmy. I don't have any problem with the parades. I mean, that's part of the ritual in this country. All right, we have parades, you know, when they walk on the moon. We have parades, you know, the United States Olympic hockey team in 1980, you know, huge parade. Sports teams get parades. I don't have a problem with that. And you know what? Security is really important, and it costs money. I don't know if, do the teams pay for that? Do the city? Here's what I know. Sports teams like the Golden State Warriors bring in a lot of money to the city that they play in. I saw a story last night, you know, on ESPN talking about what LeBron James has done for the economy in Cleveland. And the story was that LeBron James is the economy in Cleveland. Like LeBron James, take any other team athlete. No one has done more for an economy of a city than LeBron James has done for Cleveland. Now think about that for a minute. And they were interviewing people that had gone to Cleveland, and not only from the United States, but they were interviewing people that had flown from all over the world to go to Cleveland. Now, no disrespect to Cleveland, and I can say this because I went to college in Ohio, and a lot of my friends are from Cleveland. If you live in another part of the world, you're not going to Cleveland on vacation. All right, let's make sure we have an understanding here. No disrespect to all of the great jungle listeners in Cleveland. I love Cleveland, all right? I went to college in Bowling Green. I go to Cleveland all the time. I go there in the summer to hang out with my buddies. It's not as bad as people say, but you understand the message, all right? You understand the point I'm trying to make. LeBron James makes Cleveland a destination to go watch the Cavaliers. And then while you're there, you see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Maybe if you're in the spring, you're going to go to watch the Indians play. Look at the casino in the middle of downtown Cleveland. Can you imagine the revenue that that brings in to the city when the Cleveland Cavaliers are playing at home and the place is packed every game, and that goes on through April, May, and into June? You know, talk about the vendors. Talk about the people that don't make a lot of money. They were interviewing them last night and how dependent they are on what LeBron James has meant to Cleveland. And it looks like he's leaving, right? I mean, we haven't even really gotten into that. Do I think he's leaving? Honestly, I think it's a coin flip. And most people say, you're crazy. He's gone. All right, where's he going to go? You know, where's he going to go? Is he going to go to L.A.? Let's say he goes to the Lakers with LeBron James, based on what we now know their roster to be. Is that good enough to beat Houston and Golden State? I don't think so. Where's he going to go that he's going to win a championship? If that's his ultimate goal every year to win a championship, if that's your ultimate goal, go play for Boston. Go play for Golden State. Right? Going to be a very interesting first week of July when free agency hits July 1st. When we come back, Hugh Jackson. We are going to talk Cleveland Browns football with the head coach. That's next right here on CBS Sports Radio.